Welcome to Africa LSV Podcast, your monthly podcast for language services in Africa, where we cover trends, translation, interpretation, localization, and language industry in general. This podcast is presented by Bilingual Communications and Media Council and hosted by the wonderful Adina Maran Koulibaly. If you want to give your feedback or featured on the podcast, just send us an email at the address info@bilingualconsult.com.
This podcast is supported by Multilingual, your go-to source for language industry news since 1987.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Africa's LSP podcast. My name is Adina Maran and today we're talking about language facilitation. It's a very exciting world and for me, I'm really glad because I'm going to learn a lot about this special sector. With me, I have Crystal Zami. Interestingly, aside being a language facilitator, she's also an interpreter and translator. We met in Accra and since then we've been having a lot of conversations and we decided to talk about this very interesting topic. So Crystal, you're welcome to Africa's LSP podcast.
That is such a great pleasure for me to be with you today. So I am a teacher, I am an educator, so I have several years of experience in teaching, and also I am a translator and an interpreter. I'm very passionate when it comes to language acquisition, language facilitation, so I can't wait to start talking about it.
Thank you so much for making the time to talk to us about language facilitation. I guess we'll start with talking about language facilitation in general. What does it entail? And what has been your experience so far in the field?
That's good. So this is simple. Very often when we talk about language facilitation, people have various ways of defining it. But it's quite simple. It's all about seizing all the means or opportunities at our disposal to build the language of an individual. So very often we might think about the children because at that very early age, they need to learn a lot of new words, vocabulary, in order to hone their speaking skills, and which I strongly believe goes hand in glove with their thinking ability. So it's very important to work at that. So on the field, as you mentioned, we have several experiences like that where we got across, or maybe we came across young children or maybe young adults having difficulties in expressing themselves, and we had to work with them and help them in order for them to be more confident, in order for them to express their thought freely.
You made a very good point about it being focused on children, because initially when I heard about language facilitation, I was thinking it has to do with somebody trying to teach others a new language or something. But what you're referring to is someone learning their mother tongue or their native language.
You're right. You made a point here. Because language facilitation is focused on acquiring a language. And you know, when we're learning a second language, the process is totally different. And I will give you a simple example. You know, when you want to learn a second language, you are very choosy when it comes to the kind of thing that you have to learn. There is a kind of resistance you will develop. Meanwhile, it's not the case when you're acquiring your first language. So the process might be totally different.
Does it also work with adults, or how does it work with adults in that case then?
Yeah, so you would say that speech therapists sometimes use this kind of strategies and techniques to also help people who are finding it difficult to express themselves. And some people are growing up with speech delays. So for those people too, we can still use it. Though it's more focused on children, you know, learning the language, we can also adapt it to the grown-ups, for example.
All right. So what has been your experience with teaching languages in general? I know that you've taught in Ghana and other places. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, for example, I have several experiences like teaching people who already have French but want to perfect it, for example, or already have English and want to perfect it. And also, there is another type of people coming who have no knowledge, zero knowledge in the language in question. So they have to start all over, so from the basics. So definitely we talk about the fleur, which is the, for example, in French, learning the French language as a foreign language. And for the second group, like they are learning it as a second language. So those are different groups of people coming. And then we do those people that we came across.
Let's go straight to talk about language facilitation in detail. I know that as language professionals, many of us can speak other languages, and sometimes we want to transfer those languages to our children. But even if that's not the case here, how do we ensure that our children or people around us are able to acquire a language in a way that makes it easier for them to be able to speak it fluently and all that? So maybe we can talk about the techniques that are used in language facilitation based on your experience.
Sure. So we have various techniques, and depending on the person talking and the perspective from which we are talking, we can have hundreds of them. I generally pile them up into only 8 categories. The first one, for example, is all about modeling and imitation. What do I mean by that? It's simple. As parents and caregivers, so this is one point that I would like to raise before moving on. When we talk about language facilitation, it's not only incumbent to the mother, but it's incumbent to both parents, to pediatric speech pathologists, educators, caregivers, you know, everybody surrounding whoever is trying to learn that language. So when we talk about modeling, it's all about trying to do something or maybe trying to speak in a way. And whenever we're doing that, the person who is learning, which is maybe a child, we start imitating the way we put it, the voice, the tone that we're using. And by doing that every single day, the child is acquiring something new. This is all about modeling. Now we have the second technique, that is parallel talks. You play with your child, for example, and you are maybe dealing with a motorbike. The child is holding a motorbike. The child might be only interested in the color of the motorbike, or maybe only one part of the motorbike, but you want to go beyond that. So you are creating a parallel talk, talking about something else. Oh my gosh, I can see that there are 2 seats on this motorbike. I think I would like to sit down at the back here. And also, it can go very fast. So you see, you are developing another talk, but the child is learning from all these words that you're using. The speed is also learning about the seats, you know, other parts of the motorbike. So this is all about parallel talks. Now, we have this technique that I mentioned earlier, which is self-talk. And self-talk is one of my favorite when I'm working with children or maybe people learning the language. You want to achieve a goal. You are building a house, for example, around the child, and he has maybe his blocks, and you also have your blocks. So you want him to look at you. You want him to be interested in the words that you're using. All you need to do is to start using the blocks. So, for example, you will say, oh, my gosh, I would like to build a house, but how am I going to put all these pieces together? Oh, I think I have to put the big one first. So you start putting it. What should I do for it not to fall down? And all of a sudden you start thinking, oh, I think I have this piece, which is a triangle, and it is red. I would like to put it on top of it, and so on and so forth. So you see, you are doing it, and the child starts getting interested in what you're doing. Maybe you even start asking questions because he wants to know, he wants to understand, and he wants to emulate you. So this is how it goes. So this is all about the self-talk. You behave as if you're not talking to the child, as if you're talking to yourself, but it's actually the child that you are targeting. Now, the fourth one, which is expansion and indirect correction. Children speak with mistakes. And even people, like new people, like learning a new language, you will definitely make mistakes. So when we want to correct, there is a way of doing it for the person not to feel offended and then feel still enticed to learn the language. So all it takes is you correct it indirectly. How? The child is saying, dog, back. He wants to say that the dog is barking. Or maybe he wants to say, mom, spoon, eat. He wants to say, mom, I want to eat with a spoon. So all you want to do when the child says that, or whoever is in front of you saying it, you say, oh, you want to say that you want to take the spoon and eat your food. This is cool. You see, so you are correcting the child, you are helping the child to expatiate and then even add more flesh to whatever he's saying. So you don't want him to just make short sentences. You want it to be more elaborate and more devised. So you help the child to get to that level. The next one, it is extension. So extension is a bit close to expansion and indirect correction. But the difference is it at that level, you are talking about more information. You are giving more information about the conversation that you guys are having. I'm still taking the example of the motorbike where you are talking about the speed. You are talking about the number of people. So you're having a conversation, but you're adding more information, building up. So the child knows that when conversing with people, it shouldn't just limit itself to one word, but it can go beyond that. This is how we communicate. Now, the next part is setting up the environment. So you set up the environment in such a way that the child is amazed by whatever he sees, in such a way that he's pushed to ask questions. Or maybe the child needs something from you, but he needs to ask the question before getting it. So I'm explaining myself. You can hide the car of a child behind a chair, behind a table, or under a table, or maybe behind a door. The child is well aware that he needs it, and you are the one holding sway of it. So he has to ask you questions before he gets it. So you see, he's building a vocabulary because he doesn't have any choice than asking. Now, one of the last but one, which is the use of open-ended questions. So we want the children to be able to answer in a more actionable way. We don't just want them to say yes and no, yes and no. By doing that, the whoever is learning that language or maybe the child in question will grow up not being able to express his thought. He will just limit himself. But when you have, for example, you're always using the closed-ended questions, he will just say yes or no, and that's it, he's done. But because we want them to have that critical mind, to be more able to say whatever they feel, express everything at all, and then express themselves freely, so you will go rather for the open-ended questions, which are, why do you think so? Why is it so? What do you think? What do you think we should do? You know, why, where, you know, so that the child can talk more. And then the last point, which is book reading. It's true that not everybody agrees on book reading because they would just assume that all the previous techniques that we mentioned are incorporated and integrated in book readings. Because you would definitely, when you are reading a book, you would definitely talk about maybe use the technique of self-talk or parallel talk or whatever. But I personally believe that this is also a technique to facilitate language. Reading books is good because they are going to describe pictures. They are going to hear about new words. You know, there are so many things that you can do when reading a book. This is basically some of the techniques that I personally use all the time whenever I am interacting with children or whoever wants to learn the language with me.
Very, very interesting. I mean, I've never heard about these before, and I'm really learning a lot. I feel like this is somehow a sort of utopia for many traditional African settings or families, because we have families where parents do not have conversations, you know, in that way with their children. So what happens when the environment is not conducive, where parents do not even know that there are techniques like this for them to be able to interact like in this way with their children?
This is where the educator has to play a role in raising awareness. And what you said is totally true. Unfortunately, we live in an environment where the parents don't understand the importance of communicating. You know, for example, I'm living in a place here where there are kids around and they generally come and talk with me. But, you know, I always talk with them as if they are adults. And people are always laughing at that, like they don't understand. And I tell them they do understand. This is the only way the children are building their confidence. The children are understanding the world around them when you talk to them as if they are adults. So it's all about raising awareness. It's all about helping the parent to know. And this is also a problem. Like, you know, generally speaking, when we want to become parents, we don't think about what the contour of this responsibility. So once we understand it, it makes it easier. So it's very important for the parent to understand. Even if they don't, then people around them, the educator, the teachers, have a role to play in encouraging them to do that. And I remember some parent coming to me some years ago when I was just teaching before moving to my training as an interpreter. And one parent was like, look, my child does not speak as freely as his friends. what can I do? So I asked the mom, like, what are the kind of interactions you're having with the child? Are you communicating? Are you reading books? Are you talking with the child as a grown up? And she was like, no, he's too small. You can't understand. I told her, okay, let's do this. Let's give us ourselves some time. Okay. So what you're going to do every evening before the child goes to bed, you are going maybe to try and read a story and ask questions. It should be relevant questions. It's not about just asking questions for the sake of asking, but make sure it's quite relevant. The child is expressing something or the child is showing understanding. And after some time, she was like, no, my child is able to say so many words. Like, he's so free. He wants to know everything. He's so curious. Curiosity is also very important when you want a child to acquire knowledge, because this curiosity is going to push him or her to ask questions and then to find out. And this is all it takes.
From my experience, a lot of African parents usually talk to their kids when they want to scold or rebuke them, you know, and so it's interesting to have all these perspectives and to know that there are actually a lot of ways that we can have conversations. Now let's move a bit to talk about language learning in general. How does language facilitation come into play? Like, is there a link between language facilitation and language learning, for instance, for those who want to learn a second language?
Yeah, sure. So we start from the fact that from the perspective according to which people say when you master your first language, let's say your mother tongue, it's quite easy for you to also master another language. So if a child is able to master, or whenever a person learned the first language properly, learning another language can be easier because the transfer will be much easier. The connection will be easier. Now, here, if you want to learn a new language, there are some of the techniques which could still apply to learning a new language. I was telling you, for example, that when I wanted to learn English, I used to do a lot of self-talk. Because in Cote d'Ivoire, for example, in my direct environment, I had virtually nobody to speak English with. Of course, my mom does, but she was not used to speaking English with me. But the only thing I could do is to do a lot of self-talk. Walking around sometime, I have a topic in my mind. So the only thing I will be doing is try to talk to myself as if I was having a friend I was talking to, and trying to pretend to also be the person I'm talking to, and then answering, you know, it helps a lot. Even when it comes to extension, we have to do a lot of extension when we are learning a new language. Let's not just limit ourselves to answering yes, no. I think yes, no. There's no. Let's go beyond just this yes, no. We should elaborate. Let's learn to devise our thoughts. When you devise, you get used to the words. The words only come naturally when your brain is used to hearing it again and again. Give yourself the chance to hear the words again and again by talking a lot. Talk a lot as long as possible. But apart from that, those techniques, the parallel talking, which is also applying, it can be applied in learning a new language. We have reading the books and stuff, setting the environment, which can be a game that we can do with friends. But I found, apart from that, you have to have a lot of self-discipline. Because as I said, when you are learning a new language, there is a kind of resistance that you develop. Because you want to choose the kind of things that you want to learn. You feel like it's not too important for you because you feel like, okay, if I am a professional, I only need those kind of words. I don't need the rest. But a child will never choose, because there is nothing like telling the child, come and sit down, let's take a book, and then I will teach you all the utensils in the house. Creating writings also can help people develop or maybe master a new language.
By creative writing, you mean writing stories or?
Exactly, writing stories. Writing about everything you see around you and try to figure out what can be what can come next. You know, we do that a lot as a game. Whenever I'm teaching new people, a new language, I would say that way, I tend to start a story and asking them, what do they think will come next? So everybody is up to you to write it. So they'll write from their perspective. Definitely, we never have the same story. But what matters to us is to see how the people can put their thought on the paper. They are developing the words. They're also forced to go and look for more words in the dictionary. And they are forced to know how to structure a sentence. So this is what it takes to learn a new language. And a new language is quite comprehensive. It's not about only knowing the vocabulary. If you don't know more about the grammar, it won't work. So you have to put all the techniques together, all the information together to make sure that you speak fluently and you are understood by whoever is speaking the language.
You know, I find it very interesting because definitely it makes one a better parent when you're able to, when you know how to facilitate language acquisition and all that. And I wish I had all this knowledge, you know, because I also have a 6-year-old. And there was a time when I felt like she wasn't speaking too much and she wasn't very fluent and all that. But now I realized that I wasn't practicing some of the things that you spoke about. And so I can imagine how all these skills will definitely make you a better parent in many ways.
Indeed. Indeed. It helps a lot. So it's never too late, I would say this way, because she's still very young. And then at this age, they are just like sponges. They can capture everything around them. So now it's just maybe up to you to plan. How do you want it to be? Which kind of books you want her to read, which kind of conversation you want to have with her. Consider her or treat her like a grown-up. Talk to her the way you would talk to your friend. So by having those kind of conversations, she will be more confident in developing a language and using words. Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much for the advice. I'm going to put that into practice and see how it goes.
You're welcome.
So how can one become a language facilitator? Perhaps we have someone listening to us who is curious and who might have some interest or develop some interest in becoming a language facilitator based on the conversation we're having. So do you have any advice?
Yeah, sure. So it's all about ourselves reading a lot about what it takes to facilitate a language. This is one step. We also need to master the language. If you don't master it, it will be difficult for you to impact on your learner. So you need to master, first of all, what you want to do and the goals that you want to achieve. You need to master the techniques. It comes with practice. You can even have 100 techniques to facilitate languages, but it's all about practicing it, using them, opening up to new ideas, and also meeting up with and discussing with people who are also facilitators. The more you discuss, you exchange ideas, you talk about the challenges you're facing, the better it becomes because you are free, because the experience is key. So the experience will come and talk naturally. So those are some of the things that I can say as far as a language facilitation is concerned.
How about the other skills, like aside the learning aspect, the other skills?
Like writing, exactly.
For instance, I don't know if one has to be patient or something.
Oh, of course. It needs a lot of patience. And I'm happy that you're pointing it out. Because, you know, we, generally speaking, want it fast. And this is why it's not given to everybody to be a teacher. It's not given to everybody to be a facilitator. You can have the knowledge, but you don't have the patience. There's no way you can move. So you have to also be proactive. Why do you mean by proactive? Why am I insisting on proactiveness? It's because you have to observe whatever you see around. Whatever you see around you can tell you something, can give you an information. So based on that, you can create, you can go for the information, you can go for the techniques. All the techniques might not be online, but by looking, by observing, by looking at or maybe assessing the need of the child, you can go and then find solutions. So proactiveness is also key. Patience is key. Love for whatever you do. I love to talk about love because it actually is cross-cutting. Because everywhere you go, you need to love. Even if you are a translator, you need to love your job to do it properly. If you are an interpreter, you need to love your job to do it properly. So it takes a lot, actually.
I can imagine that it does. Working with children is not always easy and you need to really be patient and, like you say, love your job to be able to do it perfectly.
Indeed. That is totally true, yeah.
So talking about the learning resources for this particular profession, are there courses or schools that teach language facilitation?
But personally speaking, I have never gone through any training like that. But I guess because, for example, as I mentioned, speech therapists are trained to use those kind of techniques. So there are schools, actually, they are training depending on the perspective from which you want to teach. And if, for example, you are a child psychologist, you definitely have to learn those techniques. If you're a teacher, definitely you have to understand how to talk with children. And so it comes with that. So there are different training, different type of jobs or which have training incorporated. So as a trainer, as a teacher, definitely I went through that, understanding how children function. Once you understand the psychology, you can also know how to use those techniques.
And aside your, your experience in facilitation, how has your training and experience in the field of interpretation been like?
Yeah, so it wasn't that easy because somebody training people in speaking a language also has to be trained, So there are most of the things that we might not know that are necessary for when learning a language. It can also be like, I'll add information like tones, for example, the speed, and all the things needed to be taken into consideration whenever we started the process of learning or maybe reading, translation, and interpretation at the university. So it was a bit hectic at a certain point because you have to redefine your objectives when it comes to learning a language. How do you want to master it? Or what are the kind of information you need to know? Or what are the registers that you need to master? Because learning a language is all about exactly knowing the reason why we are learning it. And once you know it, you can exactly know how to target all the new vocabulary and also know exactly what to do, your daily activities.
And so maybe you would like to share your personal experience because you are a Francophone. So how did you come to acquire maybe the languages that you can speak now?
Okay. So first of all, French is my first language. So I grew up learning it. I grew up in Cote d'Ivoire, so it's a Francophone country. It was quite easy because in their daily activities, your daily life, you definitely interact with people. So this is how definitely you learn the language. Now, the challenge started when I got interested in the English language. As early as when I was, 13, I would say 12, I usually traveled to Ghana for my holidays. This doesn't last because it used not to last because we go just for 1 month or maybe 2 weeks. So you see, it's during a short period of time. But I would say that what helped me more was the regularity because we kept on doing it. It was consistent again and again and again. So coming for holidays all the time, you need to interact with people who are only speaking English. So you can imagine how difficult this might have been for me. And at that moment, I didn't really master it. I wasn't really too interested in learning it. So little by little, by my interaction, people started talking to me. I have to jot down points. I have to think about it. I have to imitate them at times. I have to do a lot of self-talk. For example, you are taking a bath and you're thinking, okay, I want to meet these people, but I would like to exchange with them. So what am I going to say? So it's a kind of rehearsal, but you do it on your own. And once you meet the people, it becomes a little bit easier for you to interact with them. And till I completed my A-level in Cote d'Ivoire, that we call baccalaureate, and then I moved to Ghana for some time. Like at the time, I spent something like 1 month before registering in an English department in Togo.
That's great. I mean, it's a very great experience, and I have a similar experience that I might want to share maybe later on. It's been very interesting learning about language facilitation, and especially for those of us with children, we can relate so much with all the techniques that she spoke about. Just to summarize, Crystal mentioned 8 techniques for language facilitation. She spoke about modeling and imitation, parallel talk, self-talk, expansion and indirect corrections, extension, setting up the environment, and asking open-ended questions. Very, very insightful conversation. Thank you so much, Crystal, for joining us. And let me know if you have final words you'd like to share with our listeners.
Thank you so much, Hadi, for inviting me. One thing that I would like to say is quite rewarding to teach somebody a new skill and to see the person improving and applying. So what I would like to encourage all parents to do is to seek advice because we shouldn't stay there and feel like that is it and give up. We are all able to do it. Just like we have to open up, you have to seek information and advice in order to be able to help the children. Because as I always say, the kind of environment we are grooming a child in determines the kind of speaker, the kind of person he becomes in the future. So it's up to us, caregivers, educators, and parents to work at that in order to make our children better in the future. This is all I would like to add. Thank you so much for everything.
Thank you, Crystal, and we'll talk another time.
Thank you.
We invite you to go to multilingual.com/AfricaLSP to receive a free one-year digital subscription to Multilingual Magazine. You can also find this link in the podcast description.